AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI SureTrack. Proper grain storage management leads to increased profit. With in-bin monitoring, you can hold grain, improve quality, reduce storage costs, and more. Bin Manager delivers all of that with automated bin monitoring from AGI SureTrack. The grain markets are under pressure again this morning. Wow, the selling pressure is increasing leading up to mid-morning. Okay, guys, we have a professional farmer, a guy that lives for real agriculture, and a shark on today's free-for-all.
Live from the first final discussions of the week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Rob Sharkey. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, here we are, the last day of the week, starting to put a wrap on things, and that means that it is time for the free-for-all, and there are plenty of topics for discussion. But we're going to start with weather. I think we've got to start with weather. The weather forecast, you know, when we talked with Michael Clark and Kirk Hands, Kirk Hands from BAMWX.com on Wednesday morning, they were both pointing at, you know, a potential window for some scattered showers to make their way into the middle of the country the first week of August, something like that. Others have now included that in their forecast, and I'm telling you, the reaction of the grain markets to the potential for just the potential for some scattered showers in the dry areas has been fascinating to me, and it really shows us how this market is going to trade when we're trying to factor in crop damage and figure out just how much potential for damage there really is out there. I got to keep reminding myself, and I'm going to remind everyone again.
Yes.
When we've got a little bit of rain in the forecast and you've got December corn futures above 550 and November bean futures above 1350, we're probably going to see some price pressure because we've got some issues already factored into prices, Davis.
Well, and, you know, this is all fine by me, honestly, because at some point it's going to be, oh, my gosh, we were so focused on the weather we forgot about tight stocks. I think probably we'll hit that point at some point. And then if crops aren't living up to expectations, well, then even more upside spring.
Right.
Perhaps.
Right.
Perhaps.
And
perhaps.
And the conversation all year, you know what it's been. It's been, geez, we can't afford a hiccup on production.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we hadn't had any hiccup on production, I mean, if North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota was all looking in really good shape, if it was all looking in really good shape, we wouldn't be at $5.50 in D's corn. That's
right.
The point I want to make.
Right.
So some of the crop damage has been factored and is still factored into prices. It's just that the seasonal tendency to go down for both corn and soybeans, for prices to go down in July, was really, really hard to overcome. So let's get to the end of next week and get to August and see what the market brings us. Okay, dude, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, Federal Reserve officials are set to accelerate deliberations at their meeting next week over how to scale back their easy money policies amid a stronger U.S. economic recovery than they anticipated 6 months ago. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell has said their discussions are focusing on when to start paring their monthly securities purchases and how quickly to reduce or taper them. The answers matter greatly to financial markets because Fed officials have said they are not likely to consider raising interest rates from near zero until they are done tapering those asset purchases, Chip.
Right, right. And as long as they continue to put some money into the system, it's going to be very difficult to break the equity market down. go back to early this week, we had some significant pressure on equities, and it's just been clawing it back throughout the week on the promise that the spigot is not going to be shut off.
Well, at least 11 Republicans say they will vote for the $579 billion physical infrastructure deal after agreeing to pay for it in part by delaying a costly Trump-era Medicare regulation, but they do not expect to announce details until at least Monday. Any deal could still face resistance from Democrats on both sides of the Capitol, making the prospects uncertain, as a bipartisan group of 22 senators works out the final sticking points. Important to, and I feel like it's becoming even more and more important. You've got two segments to this infrastructure deal now. You've got the physical infrastructure deal, and you've got the human infrastructure deal. Both seem pretty contentious, but man, once we start debating the social side, look out, I say.
Well, the social side is going to go reconciliation. And we'll talk with Wiesmeyer about what's going to be tagged on in that reconciliation bill. I mean, Davis, there may be, well, as things stand right now, it looks like there will be. We had this conversation with Vince Malanga earlier this week. It looks like there will be a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants already in the country included in the reconciliation bill that is being called a human infrastructure bill. The other thing that Jim and I are going to remind everyone of today when he gets on here is what reconciliation is, what was originally intended for and how it was to be used. And they have not changed the rules on it. And if the parliamentarian doesn't, you know, raise their hand and say, wait a minute, there's a whole lot of stuff in this reconciliation bill that shouldn't be in there, then we've got a completely busted system.
Well, Chip, hints of a Biden-Xi summit could come this weekend when the State Department's number two official travels to China for the first face-to-face meeting of senior officials in more than 3 months. The official's two-day visit may pave the way for higher-level interactions, including a possible Biden-Xi summit during the meeting of the group of 20 leading economies in October. Costs for materials, transportation, and employees are all rising, and companies are struggling to continue to absorb the costs. That has meant rising prices for everything from metal fasteners to Oreo cookies, helping fuel inflation like the U.S. has not seen in more than a decade. A poll of more than 600 U.S. businesses found that 33% were planning on raising prices, while 4% of them were planning to cut prices.
Wow. Wow. And when we talk about the disruptions to the supply chains out there, we can, you know, Oreo cookies is going to get everybody's attention, okay?
Oh, sure. Then it's serious.
You know, I get that.
Then it's serious, yeah.
Then it gets serious. But think about it for this fall with fertilizer, with machine parts, with everything that we rely on to keep the ag system well lubricated through the fall and into the winter. Those things could be in really tight supply, Davis.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. America's freight railroads are struggling to bring back workers, contributing to a slowdown in the movement of chemicals, fertilizer, and other products that threatens to disrupt factory operations and hinder a rebound from the pandemic, according to shippers and trade groups cited by the Wall Street Journal. The challenges largely stem from labor shortages and widespread supply chain bottlenecks as manufacturing ramps up and the economy works to snap back.
Yeah. Chip. Yeah, yeah, and it's all a question of how fast can these disrupted supply chains get back to operating it at normal capacity. When they do, does the price increases that we have seen because of shortages, are those price increases pulled back? Well, we see it happen in fertilizer. It only takes about 10 years to happen.
Right, about 10 years.
but it does happen. Wow. We got the free-for-all coming up next. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Rob Sharkey, right here on AgriTalk.
AGI SureTrack's Bin Manager is the industry's leading grain bin management solution, supported by the only platform on the market to connect data points from across your operation. Soil, weather, machine, agronomic, equipment, and grain characteristic data combine to deliver a data story that drives profit and production. Mobile or desktop, stay informed, stay safe, and stay connected with AGI SureTrack. For more information, visit www.agisuretrack.com.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Lazy yellow moon coming up tonight, shining through the trees.
All right, I got to admit, it's in my head. I can't not say it. Okay, so I went fishing in the dark last night and caught a shark.
Ew.
Rob Sharkey. The Shark Farmer Podcast. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. I hope you release that poor thing.
Oh, I did. I let it go. It was a little dogfish is what it was. I just felt like it had to go back. It did. Everything
Thanks
good,
for having
buddy?
Me on, Chip. Yeah, everything's good. Everything's rolling right along.
All right. Tell us about crop conditions over your way in, what would you call it, North Central?
Yeah, that's where we're at, just about 20 miles south of I-80 towards the middle of the state. Things look really good. You know, the aerial applicators have been going nonstop, so it's apparent farmers are investing in the fungicide. They have faith that they've got a good crop out there. I've actually put some foliar on, had to buy that in season, which this season has been horrible, but it was tight. So that shows me that a lot of guys are thinking the same thing. They want to throw a lot at this crop because it is a – now, saying that, I am disappointed in the rows around the cop. So I think it was hot when we were setting ears. I think we've got a very good crop, but I think the ear size might keep us in check too.
Wow. Okay, you're the first one that I've heard say anything on that, Rob. I mean, are you looking at 14s and 16s instead of 16s and 18s?
Yeah, I mean, I would say 16s are about the average, which, you know, if you're really going to have those big crops, you got to have those consistent 18s. But that being said, things look amazing. I imagine we're going to have a good crop. We're going into a hot week, but yet still the temperatures are dipping down into the high 60s. So we should be fine.
Yeah, that nighttime temperature is very important to keep an eye on. If we can get it under 70 degrees and transfer that energy from the plant material into the kernels, really, that's all that matters this time of the year. Good stuff, Rob. Glad you're here, buddy. Thanks. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chip. It's Friday, and glad to be back.
Yeah, okay. Tell us about what's going on up in the prairies.
Oh, she's dry. And, you know, this is the same drought that's impacting most of the western United States. You know, states like Montana hit hard, North Dakota hit hard. And it's covering a lot of the southern part of the western Canadian prairies as well. You know, I this week, I've kind of really honed in, Chip, on, like, there's the issues with the canola crop and the spring wheat crop.
Yep.
But I think the real hard one here is for the rancher and decisions on whether or not to cow the, you know, some of their herd. And some of the organizations are talking about 20% cull in some of these impacted areas. Others talking about 40%. Those are multi-year effects, Chip. You just don't, next year, you just don't have cows again, right? And
right.
You're selling in a down market. And, you know, we know that there's a cow cycle and you buy back in 3 years and the prices are a lot higher. It's a really tough time on ranchers trying to find some feed.
It absolutely is, 100%. Sean, it's just it is really, really a tough decision for a lot of guys to make. Guys out in Northern California had Jack Lavers on Farmer Forum a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about culling his herd, not all of his herd, but culling part of his herd. But he said that there are ranchers in Northern California that won't be. They won't drop a calf next year because they're just getting out.
Yeah, and, you know, the Canadian cow herd, we saw this in 2003 with BSC. You know, people sell off their herd. They sell their 50, 100, 200 pairs. They don't come back, right?
Yeah.
Those are people that leave and they find other things to do in the industry. And you need that healthy cow-calf sector to feed the feed yards, then feed the packing plants. You know, we've transitioned so quickly from packing plant capacity to what are we doing with the cows? It's been interesting to sort of see that news cycle really flip.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. I want to point out the U.S. West drought is longer than the Dust Bowl. So look west and you'll see the dry.
Yeah. Jim, add some perspective to that, because it is an historic drought in the West now, and the time to recover from it, as Haney was just suggesting, this isn't a quick turnaround. When you look at the lowest lake levels in 150 to 170 years in the western third of the country, this is going to take years and years to recover from. And if it doesn't, that flood is going to be biblical.
Yes, and it's changing California agriculture, as Sean suggested, longer term as well. But look at North Dakota. I think the market could be being lulled to sleep here, because North Dakota is very important when it comes to corn and soybeans now.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If that crop is hurt as bad as some people think, that could surprise those people just focused on the traditional I states.
Yeah. Absolutely. Rob, are you seeing the haze in the atmosphere there in north central Illinois?
Are you talking about the dicamba drift?
Okay, we can talk about that if you want.
No,
I was talking
joke.
About the smoke from the fires out west.
We see it out here. It is not as prevalent as what we've seen, some places in the country, but yeah, there's definitely a haze out here. I imagine the same where you're at, right, Chip?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm seeing it. And I was in Kansas City earlier this week, and I could really see it down there. It comes down to management of the federal grounds, the Bureau of Land Management. Jim, what is going on with the management of BLM right now?
Well, we had what was called yesterday at the nomination hearing a skunk fight. they came out after the nominee, so it's up in the air, literally, Chip.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And I've railed on it a few times on the show, but when you look back at the history of the country and how the natives, how they managed timbers, and we just got completely away from it, in the 70s? And so we've had 50 years of bad management on that land out there, you guys. It should be absolutely no surprise that the fires are burning bigger, hotter, and lasting longer and causing more damage. If you're not going to manage things, well, then we're paying the consequences for it right now.
Yeah, and Chip, another part on that is that, what we've seen in Canada is the federal government came out a couple weeks ago, I think it was, and, they're mandating through some of these really, really dry areas in British Columbia that the railways have to slow down because they're worried about the trains starting fires.
Sure.
And so that has an impact, too, on logistics at a time where, we're trying to get chips and all the shortage of this and that, and every week there's a new thing that we can't find when we go to the store. So it's very much connected.
Right. Hey, Rob, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on this week was to get your take on one of the executive orders that President Biden was pushing, and that's the right to repair. How important is the right to repair issue, Rob?
This keeps coming up, and of course, it's extremely important. If you buy a piece of machinery, and they're not small investments, these things cost more than a lot of houses do. They're incredibly expensive. They're incredibly complicated. That being said, when people ask for a personal experience where you can't repair something, I honestly, when it gets to that point, it's kind of beyond me anyway. And I do need their computers, their techs that knows what they're doing. So I can't personally say that I've really been affected by it. But yeah, it's something you definitely want to keep in mind, because you don't want to buy something and then have to be wrangled into taking it to a dealer at $150 an hour or whatever they get.
Right, Right. Okay. Rank some issues for me here, Rob, because I've been having a conversation with some listeners, and so in your order of importance, because of the infrastructure bill, broadband is getting a lot of attention right now. The other thing that's getting a lot of attention because of the infrastructure bill is how are we going to pay for it? Therefore, taxes and corporate taxes, estate taxes, a step up in basis. And then the third thing, health insurance and health insurance costs. So if you could go straight to, is Sherry your representative?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. If you go straight to Sherry Bustos and say, Sherry, here are the things that I want you to focus on, would you pick broadband, health insurance, or the Biden tax plan and preventing it?
Well, you know, obviously I would look at the capital gains, the inheritance tax. I mean, that's for very selfish reasons. But I also think it's incredibly important to keep agriculture healthy, to keep the experienced people, you know, the people that grew up farming and understand it on the ground. Again, I'm a little biased, too, because I think broadband's right up there, too. I know not every farmer thinks that, but I think more and more are, especially when you're talking about the availability of off-farm jobs, extra income. If a farmer or spouse is able to...
we got to go. We'll be back with more with Rob in a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. As I'm looking at the quote screen right now, Brian, there's one market that's kind of standing out, and that's bean oil. It's hinting that there may be some upside in that market.
Well, it's trying. It's trying against a wave of selling in the rest of the grain and soy markets. So, you know, we'll see where it goes, you know, in regards to the rest of them, corn, soybeans, and in particular. You know, midday weather runs are going to probably determine how traders want to position themselves ahead of the weekend. But it looks like hot and dry for most of the Corn Belt next week. And then in week two, there's some rain possibility. So we'll see how that all shakes out in the midday runs.
Yeah, boy, they are really ultra sensitive to any sign of rain in the forecast. And it's being reflected with corn down 10 cents. Beans are down 8 to 11 cents. The winter wheat market is under some light pressure, and so is the spring wheat. The spring wheat market is off 6 to 8 cents here. Take us over to the livestock trade. We've got big cattle reports coming this afternoon.
Yeah, we do. And feeder cattle, they're responding to the weakness in the corn, so they're showing strong gains there. We had a report yesterday, the cold storage report, and that was friendly to beef, and so we're getting some strength from that. We have the cattle on feed, cattle inventory reports this afternoon, like you mentioned. And so some, you know, potentially market moving data coming out of there, though traders don't always, you know, get the best read on that cattle data, I don't think, in my opinion anyway. Hog market trading to the upside as we continue to rebound off those June lows and just keep pushing higher there.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Brian. Have a good weekend. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Rob Sharkey, are you still talking?
Yeah, you know, Sean Haney would never cut me off.
I didn't cut you off. That was producer Big Apple Joe Stackler. He's the one with the big red button, Rob.
I did it discreetly. I faded you out. I didn't cut you off. So it sounded almost like you were, it almost sounded like we meant for it to happen that way.
No, I see how it is. You get me wound up. You hit me with a big question, get me all wound up with about 10 seconds left to go on the break. Wow. Okay. I'm seeing a lot about you, Chip.
Actually, there was about 40 to go. I thought maybe that would be enough time for you to pull your thoughts together, but, you know, sometimes. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. This is AgriTalk, and it's a free-for-all. We got Rob Sharkey, Sean Haney, and Jim Wiesmeyer. We got to get to the infrastructure bill, Jim. What's the status? Why didn't we get a vote on Wednesday, or what was the vote on Wednesday, I should say? What's going on?
Well, the Republicans, as they should have, you know, blocked it because the text wasn't out and they didn't have the pay-fors, you know, battle, completed. The only thing that could derail this is the pay-fors, because the votes are there, Chip. They are there. So we'll have to see on the weekend whether or not there's any surprises in the official text once released and in the pay-fors, because that's always controversial when you're talking transportation.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And Rob, as you were saying, and you were getting wound up about at the end of the last segment, when it comes to those pay-fors, we really got to stay focused on the potential changes on the estate tax and the step-up in basis, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is just vital to keeping a strong farm economy. I know it's selfish to say when you get affected by it, but you work so hard in these families, these multi-generational families. These are the people that know how to run farms. And yeah, it would be a shame to see all that go away.
Yeah. You know, and when we talk about it on AgriTalk, I usually don't just say farmers. I include small businesses in that conversation. And Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that is now how it's commonly talked about, right? It's small businesses and farms and ranches.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, I want to say in my speeches that the healthcare cost usually is, in private conversations, the first thing some producers bring up to me. So I want to elevate that healthcare because it's very costly.
Yeah, but what can we do about it right now?
Yeah. Well, what can you do about the taxes too?
Well,
but from a policy perspective, yes, it is the capital gains issues, things like that. I understand that. But you can do some things, prescription drugs, to try to put muscle on the cost on that. Try to, get a realistic, affordable healthcare package, since that is going to continue, and things like that. But boy, that can punch you in the gut if you don't have a viable health insurance program.
Haney, I know you want in on this.
Well, I was just going to say that healthcare stuff is like sort of like it's in the same bucket as immigration. Like, who the heck wants to touch it? Because you're not going to ever get anything done. But I think with healthcare, that does connect to the broadband issue. And I heard GT Thompson yesterday on your show.
Yeah,
it connects because, you know, we're talking about things like telemedicine,
yes,
which has become much more of a topic during the pandemic. That's an area where we can try to increase the efficiency of the providing of healthcare, especially in rural areas as they have struggles getting doctors to come into rural communities. I think there's a connection there between the healthcare and the broadband.
Okay. There absolutely is, and the rural-urban divide would narrow if you had very fast internet. If we could have all farm states be like North Dakota, problem solved.
Yeah, you guys, I'm telling you, and I've said this before on the show, I live outside of city limits, and when fiber got hooked up to my house a year and a half ago, absolutely changed my life. Absolutely.
Yeah.
100% changed my life. If you're in an area with slow internet and you think, it's not that big of a deal, wait until you get fast internet and you'll figure out how big of a deal it was. Rob?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm paying about $500 a month for five up, five down, just so we can send a radio show to Nashville. It's just, it's crazy.
Unbelievable, dude. Ouch.
And one of the things that pushes this, Chip, too, is this week the Wall Street Journal talked about how Billings, Montana, home of Michelle Jones, that shows up on the show quite frequently, Billings, Montana is number one on the Wall Street Journal Housing Market Index. Mm-hmm. Once again, showcasing how people are moving out of the city, moving to smaller areas. Billings over 100,000.
Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, exactly.
Is on that list. Yep.
People, when they move from the big city to smaller areas, they're like, hey, where the heck's the internet? And so that will push this discussion forward as well.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Hey, on the healthcare issue, Jim, I mean, will the Biden administration really look to change up Obamacare?
I think that they will. Yes. Watch the reconciliation measure. That's where your grab bag of things can happen.
Okay.
And if you recall, that can help you win elections if you do it right.
Okay, so the infrastructure, the bipartisan part of the infrastructure plan is bridges, roads, locks and dams, broadband, stuff that we can see, feel, touch, make it work. The human infrastructure part of it, the reconciliation part, Jim, remind everybody what the reconciliation process is for.
Well, as you correctly said, the parliamentarian really is the principal person who, in fact, you know, this case, she will have to determine what qualifies and what doesn't qualify it. But they can get very creative in writing, Chip. So although the immigration idea on the surface would not qualify, we'll have to see how they write it up. But this was in the infancy of this was to deal, you know, with the debt limit and yeah. things that this thing could they had to have a mechanism to do that, and you're going to have that thrown into the mix as well. But let's just get to the bottom line. The Democrats are going to have the votes to pass, you know, the reconciliation and the huge expenditures of, you know, programs in there.
Is immigration reform going to stay part of the reconciliation bill?
If it goes on past history, it will not. But again, as I said, it's how they write it and if they can find a budget angle to it, because that's really the, you know, litmus test. So we're going to have to see. In this case, it spends money. So, you know, we'll have to see if the revenue offsets that. But lots of surprises can happen in a reconciliation measure.
You guys, this has got me nervous as heck. Rob, what about you? I mean, they're going to throw everything that they can into this reconciliation bill, and it's going to be up to the parliamentarian to decide what can stay and what can't. But, Rob, they're going to throw everything into it.
Yeah, you know, it's politics at its best. I mean, you're just going after stuff for your constituents back home, and it doesn't necessarily benefit the entire country. I think people are well more concerned about the immigration than, of course, you know, the mainstream media is definitely letting on.
Yeah.
You saw that at the hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee this week. If you think legislatively you can get anything through on a farm worker bill, an immigration bill, you just cannot. It was a visceral hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So that's why you have to go in backdoor approaches like the reconciliation bill, if it qualifies.
Right. Okay. Jim, when we talked earlier this week about the Corn Ethanol Mandate Elimination Act that Senator Feinstein is promoting along with others, Collins, you said, listen, don't get so worked up about this. It's a reintroduction. It's not going to happen. Brian Jennings from ACE, the CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol, told me the same thing on the show yesterday. But I don't want – this is one of those things that I just – people have to understand that the RFS is still under attack.
Oh, definitely. And they got creative in the writing of that legislation, corn ethanol only. They tried to tie it to climate change and things like that. Absent a skullduggery approach in the reconciliation bill again, Chip, if they put it in at the 11th and a half hour where people don't know it's in there, which I doubt, you know, because people will have to see what's in there eventually. Yeah, this is a show bill. This is just a show bill. And I know Reuters said it was a bipartisan bill. Give me a break. There was no farm state lawmaker on that bill.
Right.
Well, they're not crazy. I just find it so curious that, you know, so much talk about climate change and the need to address that. And this isn't, obviously, President Biden's not attached to this, but obviously there is Democrats that are attached to this bill. Biofuels are one of the ways they're one of the solutions. And so you have a time where an administration is canceling pipelines, but at the same time also tearing apart legislation that benefits the use of the use of biofuels. I just, it's like hypocrisy at its best. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's mixed messages, and it's you know, congratulations, refiners, you're doing good lobbying.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Continue to make an issue out of things that That shouldn't be an issue. But the ability of Senator Feinstein to present what she calls facts that are completely wrong in a piece of legislation just absolutely blows me away. Listen up to this, everybody. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation are presenting the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert. Join us for some of country music's biggest stars. Raise money for FFA. Concert is going to be September 20th at 7 Central, and your FFAer can be part of it. Text a picture of them in their blue jacket to Farm On at 31313.
The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It is a free-for-all. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio, and Rob Sharkey, he's the Shark Farmer Podcast, Radio and TV. Okay, last Friday, Jim made it known to us that Pro Farmer and other companies had been asked by lawmakers to help them understand what USDA World Ag Outlook Board, that is responsible for the supply and demand reports, and the National Ag Statistics Service, NAS, responsible for the supply side estimates, crop estimates, yield estimates, what they could and should do better and how they might do it better going forward. Jim, you've been collecting all kinds of info, and I'll let you know, man, when you said that last week, my email and text got filled up over the weekend. I've shared some of that those comments with you as well. But what are you learning?
It's been a humbling experience because contacts over 40 years have come through for me, Jeff, both inside and outside government. I've got many grain industry analysts have commented, existing USDA's top economist, farmer top economist. NAS has been very gracious with their time in edits of my copy. And this is going to be a goodie. I mean, I've learned a lot, too. And I've never had the luxury of spending weeks on any article because I've worked for a wire service, a Pro Farmer, of course. We got a, you know, bottom line for 8 or 9 items for, you know, front page. But this one I'm getting some breath on, and it'll should be out early next week as a PDF document because it's rather long because we want to give it breath. But both USDA's World Board and the top economist and NAS were humbled themselves. They're open to suggestions. Yes. Some people don't think that they are, but I'm telling you they are. And it's some of it's cutting and some of the comments I've received. But bottom line, I think anyone should read this for opportunities to make the forecast from the World Board better, the estimates from NAS better.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that has always impressed me when talking to the top economist at USDA or anybody that's in charge of the estimates coming out of NAS is how they look at the process that they are supposed to follow. You've heard me on this show say many times, it's the law, follow the law. Well, they have laws inside of their estimates that they've got to follow on the process, the timing of the release, the type of information that they release, how they gather the information. It's all part of the process that is driven by laws and rules and regulations that are on the books, right, Jim?
Yeah. And you know, what came out in my research, Chip, that move from ERS to Kansas City, that in the short term really impacted the World Board. The reason it put a lot more work on them in Washington because more than a few ERS analysts who served as support for the World Board either retired or got another job because they didn't want to go to Kansas City. Now, they're hiring in Kansas City, a very good analyst, I was told, but it takes time. So that jumped out at me in the research. And as far as other things that they should do and don't, a number of industry analysts say we need export estimates by specific country that they don't really do. So I think that could be an element of progress for the future. But NASA also commented on the response rates and how they track when they think there is an errant, you know, farmer response. All this is in the report, Chip.
That's where I wanted to go with Rob here, is on the response rate to the surveys. And it in a lot of cases, Rob, when I talk with farmers, and I'm sure when you do too, they think those surveys are a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you hate to say it out loud, but yes, I would totally agree.
Yeah. And filling out those surveys, I talk about it all the time, and NASS is a results-driven number. Whether we are talking about the yield estimate, the acreage estimate, it is a results-driven estimate that comes out of NASS. And the results that I'm talking about are the surveys that are filled out. So if you fill them out with misleading or wrong information, that's what it's going to get. That's what we're going to end up with in the estimates, Rob, right?
I suppose. But, you know, there is a overriding distrust of the government. I mean, we are what we are. Farmers, we don't like government. We don't like the intrusion. Yep. Hence, when we got to fill these out, we're going to grumble and complain the entire time.
Yeah. And the other thing about that on the survey side of things is even those that fill it out as accurately as they possibly can, they still get the phone calls. I fill it out. I'm going to fill it out in front of the deadline. Don't worry. I'm going to get it. But then the phone continues to ring. It turns into a pain. Sean, what do you got, bud?
Well, this is where I think we got to find the use of more and more technologies to eliminate the, you know, if we're going to have garbage in, garbage out, if we can't rely on the farmers for providing survey data, then we got to find technologies using satellite imagery and all those kinds of things, drone, whatever it is, to come up with more accurate, timely estimates. Because if the information is not timely and we're always having to apologize that it's, you know, this is old and things have changed, it's not exactly great data. So technology plays a big part in the future.
Good.
But, you know, some analysts told me they should use John Deere data for their equipment and Corteva, but that gets into your farmer privacy issue. So it's not
damn
as
right.
easy as you might think.
That's exactly right. Rob, 30 seconds. What are you working on?
Well, I think everybody should stay tuned for Sean Haney's show this afternoon. The man is a broadcasting legend.
See what he did there?
I would agree. I think it's coming up like real soon, isn't it? On Sirius?
Right. I introduce him every time I end my show, and I don't think he appreciates it.
Look who I have to follow. Look who I have to follow. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Stay tuned on Sirius for Haney. Or don't forget, the second hour of AgriTalk starts at 2:06 Central on your local radio station. We can't forget that. Come back this afternoon because I'm going to have a conversation with Clark Neighbors from BIS Commodities. Jim Wiesmeyer, thank you so much. Rob Sharkey, we got to keep doing this, buddy. Thank you so much for making time. And Sean Haney, have fun, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Great weekend, everybody.